everyone. Welcome to Chats Over Coffee with my yoga teacher. I am the yoga teacher. My name is Kayla and I'm here with Peter. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Yeah.
So what have you got going on in the month of April?
I didn't say I did stand-up comedy before you said what you're up to. People might not know that. They might just think I'm some nobody.
Yeah, some random guy.
Some randomer that you teach. But I want people to know I have status as well, you know. So
as a comedian, Peter Brush, what are you doing at the moment?
Well, so I always say I'm never doing anything notable. I've got gigs that I'm happy to be doing. Like, I'll be doing the Comedy Store in London for the weekend for the first time. So that's pretty cool. I might get some clips out of it. So, yeah. So, I mean, I'm only doing 20-minute spots on mixed bill shows and stuff, but I list them all on the website. So, you know, that'll be in the show description, peterbrushcomedy.com. And follow my Instagram, @peterbrush_, and there'll be clips of me doing jokes and stuff. And one of them did all right the other day. So I think Instagram, they let you have one thing do well every so often out of random to give you hope.
Yes, I agree.
I wish I had more exciting stuff to say, but things are all right. So how are you? What are you doing in April?
So I have decided, after 4 years of teaching my regular weekly online yoga classes, that I'm going to mix things up a bit and I'm not going to teach them like that anymore.
OMG.
I know.
Mic drop.
So if you are interested in practicing yoga with me, it's going to be set up more like courses and sets of classes and things like that. But I'm actually looking for feedback now, what people want and what they're looking for and things like that. So I told a lot of my regular students, if you're like, no, Kayla, just bring back the Sunday morning class, then just put that in the feedback and that will be part of the feedback. So I'm taking a bit of a break this month, in a sense, to reevaluate kind of business things and, you know, assess how I feel and get my head back into the right place, give myself some headspace to focus on my business a bit more and to create some new offerings that I think will be really fun and interesting and relevant. So stay tuned. And if you're really interested, again, like Peter said, go find us on Instagram or on our websites. Mine's kaylamccormack.com. Simple and easy.
Links in the show description. It's a good opportunity for anyone that's never checked out you as an actual teacher to, like, have a look at what you're actually doing, because, you know, I'd give a good reference.
Thank you.
Okay, shall we let the show happen now?
Yes, enjoy.
Well, I'm just going to try and do a joke that didn't work on stage.
Well, now that you've warned me it's not going to work, then I'm probably going to be less likely to laugh, right?
Exactly.
This is a crap joke, so why don't you just listen?
So this didn't work on stage.
When you say something doesn't work on stage, do you just get like crickets? Like, is it actually that bad when you get to the end of your joke?
Sometimes it's complete silence, but often when something doesn't work, it usually just means 20% of people laughed a bit. You don't often get complete silence unless it doesn't make any sense.
Usually someone's
generally a couple of people tear, but you know it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It shouldn't get more than 20% of people laughing at it, basically. So.
Okay. Yeah, that makes
Some
sense.
People are very happy with 20%. Some people I've seen haven't changed their act for years and are still just getting 20% for every punchline and clearly haven't got the memo. But
haven't got the memo.
That's what I mean, it doesn't work. Or like some people will laugh, a few people will go,
yeah.
That kind of thing. I've spent all day on this, thank you, but that's...
Okay, so let's hear the one that didn't work then.
So this didn't work. So let's say, for the sake of smoke and mirrors, this is based on something that's actually true. I don't actually know much of my family history anyway. And I'd be very interested in doing that 23andMe thing. But then I get worried if I do the 23andMe thing, it's going to like keep my DNA somewhere and my genome's going to get like sequenced or something. And not that anyone wants clones of me. I mean, what would you? But do you know what I mean? Have you ever done that? 23andMe
no,
type
I haven't,
stuff?
I haven't.
Would you do it?
I don't know, because I've actually thought the same thing. There was a theory that they were doing something with the, not a conspiracy theory bunker stuff, but I mean, just like they just had your data and they just kept it. And I thought that was a bit odd because it's genealogical data. So they were keeping your genealogical data as in like your, not just your ethnicity, but if they had any connections for that, they were keeping that as well. And it's like, data's money. Do I want you to sell my information?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So but no, I haven't done it.
I'd like to do, if I was an ethical one and someone let me know, I would do it. I'd be interested to find out what my genetic makeup is, because one side of my family are much more olive skinned. And so I wouldn't be surprised to find out that they weren't all completely Anglo-Saxon, white British. So I'm curious. So I don't really know much about my extended family. So in doing so, I found out that I have a great-grandfather who is English, but lived in Germany for a few... Oh, no, hang on. No, he was German for the purposes of this. Okay. So, why didn't he work on stage? Anyway, okay. So he was in Germany during the 1920s and early 30s, which is obviously a significant time to be in Germany. And turns out, for a little bit of research, I found that he actually knew Hitler briefly. Not well, but they were at the same tennis club. So that's where he met him, of course. And they played. And so he was actually involved in some of the first Nazi rallies.
Okay, that was not too bad.
Was it worth the 5 minutes of preamble? I don't know about that.
Maybe that's the catch. It's a 20% laugh from me as well, I think. 20% laugh.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. It's the first time I've ever taken it. I've had echinacea tea before.
It's not quite strong, though. You need like 7 or 8 cups of that to kind of balance out.
Yeah.
Not that it's not good for you, but, you know, it's not quite as strong as taking a constant.
Do you ever have valerian tea for sleeping?
Mm.
Well, in The Sopranos, Christopher's like a heroin addict, and he's like hanging out with some other heroin, and they're both supposed to be in recovery, but they're starting to slip, and before they start taking hard drugs again, one of them goes to the health food shop to buy loads of valerian tea. They stick it all, because apparently they said, this makes sense, I didn't check this, that's where Valium comes from, Valerian.
Oh.
Which makes sense, because the words seem similar, so it must be true.
Yeah.
So they had like really, 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 really strong, like 10 bags of Valerian tea, so it's like Valium.
I wonder if it worked. Probably not.
Let's do it.
Well, all these pills, they come from nature, right? They come from something. They stem from something.
MDMA doesn't. And crystal meth don't. And they just like...
Well, not drugs. Chemical compounds. Like remedies.
Yeah, right.
And but hell.
One man's remedy is another man's, you know, fun night out. <I don't...
laughs> Something like that.
Crutch, probably.
Mm.
Anyway, so... Scratch my car. It's annoying.
Oh, no. How'd you do that?
Reversed into a pillar.
Oh, well, that would do it.
Yeah, it is my fault. So that gig's cost me minus £500, I think.
Oh, no.
Never mind. Got 8 more followers from on Instagram from it. So, what was that? 70, £80 each from each of those?
Oh, there's some expensive followers.
They'll probably leave anyway once they see me doing other stuff. I'm getting it sorted out next point. It didn't look that bad. It was a very boring thing to talk about. I put it out of my mind psychologically after I did it fairly well, but not like completely. But I was thinking a few years ago, I would have done this thing more so, where you sort of tease yourself with the idea that you can sort of go back in time and correct the thing that you didn't like. Oh, if only I'd replayed the tape, I could have done this. But I didn't do that as much as I used to do. But that's, I don't know, maybe that's because of meditation or something, I don't know. But because, I don't know, you can tease yourself with the, oh, if I'd have only like, and then you sort of psychologically replay the, you know, correct version in your mind. But like, I didn't do that so much, but I remember doing that when I've made mistakes before. When I've made the 2 previous mistakes in my life.
Oh, yeah.
So just sort of had to try and let it go a little bit. And definitely not dwelling, which is why I've not been spending the last 5 minutes talking about it. So,
yeah.
So completely cured. Don't even think like that at all now.
I really struggle with, because obviously we're renovating the house, there's a lot of like new things in the house that are like built into the house. So then if something happens and I damage it, because it's not fixable, I feel that like... you know, I really, but I'm slowly getting better at like letting go. Same with the kitchen. Our worktop is wood, and if you drop something heavy on it, or you know, something, you'll damage it. You know, it'll get a little dint or a scratch or something. And I'm like, ugh. But I'm like, I'm doing my best to like, no, it's a working kitchen. It's gonna have marks sometimes. You know, I'm obviously trying to be careful, but like, it's gonna happen. It's gonna be an accident at some point, isn't there? Where you've dropped something and it scratches the floor or dents the countertop or something. But I don't tend to play it back in my head the right way. I just kind of go, ugh.
Once it gets to a stage where it's been scratched enough, though, like the work board or
yeah,
the car, you just
don't really want it to get like that.
Yeah, of course you don't. But if it ever did, you wouldn't think the same way about it, would you? Not preserve.
No, you're right.
It's the whole broken windows theory, isn't it? You know that?
No.
I think it was New York. So there was like loads of low-level crime happening in areas, I think it's of New York. They did a thing called the broken windows policy, where they just made sure that if there were ever smashed windows, because it was the cheapest thing to do, they've just made sure that they quickly replaced any smashed windows as quickly as possible. And it just gave more the impression that it wasn't such a bad neighborhood and that stuff wasn't going on there. So psychologically, people didn't do so many bad things in the neighborhood because it looked nicer. But obviously, if something starts, because I probably notice it in areas around where we live, maybe, like if a part of your area starts going to shit a bit and there's more and more graffiti and like vandalism and stuff like that, then, and it isn't sorted out, it just like psychologically lends the opportunity for things to happen, or like people gravitate towards it that are maybe a bit shady, I don't know. So so yeah, same thing with dodgy worktops and stuff.
Yeah, that's really interesting though.
Right, okay, so we're gonna talk about EFT tapping today, because I saw you, I can't have done the class with it in, I don't think, but
no,
you did a class with some in, and I thought I must ask what that is.
Yeah, so
tell me everything and then I'll push back and tell you that it sounds like mumbo jumbo.
okay. So what I did was an empowerment workshop rather than, say, a yoga class.
Yeah, I remember this.
So it was in that workshop.
I don't need empowerment. So I thought I'd just powerful enough.
Whatever. You know. Your head's already too big. No, I'm joking. So what I did was, in that empowerment workshop, I did a few different things to try to introduce people to different tools they can use to help them not just feel better, but process things. You know, we did lots of different meditations and things like that during as well. And we went through some kind of analytical processes, you know, how do you feel about this, and talking about different things and answering questions. And one of the things we did was EFT tapping. So EFT tapping is emotional freedom technique, and it stems from acupuncture. So it uses the meridian lines in Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese medicine. You could say it also kind of links to acupressure, because obviously you're not actually puncturing the skin in tapping. A lot of those kind of techniques, like tapping in general, just like literally tapping on your body, that's used in Tai Chi, that's used in different types of yoga practices. This is just a bit more laid out, you could say. Like someone's just said, this is the technique, and they've kind of laid it out a bit more thoroughly. I will caveat everything that I'm saying with, I have not actually trained in EFT tapping, so I'm not like a teacher in this way, but it's to some
you went off the grid doing it.
Yeah. It's to some extent, I mean, I am trained in like restorative yoga, and I do know stuff about Chinese medicine, and I do, obviously I am trained in yoga and different types of you know, vinyasa and hatha and all these different old techniques, and I think as well, when it comes to training, a lot of it is self-taught, so you do have to keep a little bit open mind when you're talking about people not being technically trained in it or have a qualification, because sometimes those aren't actually as necessary as you might think when you touch into the more holistic side of things. You know, self-taught stuff can be quite good as well. Anyway, I don't do very much with it. I wouldn't offer it as like a service. So some people might offer EFT tapping as a service to help someone deal with a traumatic event or something like that. That's not my area of expertise. I don't help people work through trauma. This was more high level, just another option instead of meditating. So basically, EFT tapping is, as it says, it's tapping. So you're going to use either two fingers, your index finger and your middle finger, or four, so your four fingers. So you can tap below the collarbone, the sides of the eyes, so kind of near the temple or on the bone, in between the eyebrows. So if you do in between the eyebrows, you probably want one finger at a time. But you can go kind of around a bit if you want, so on the bone, around the eyebrow. Under the eyes, so again on the cheekbone, the spot under the nose, that's like one finger again as well, right under the nose, and the same on the chin, so the spot just under the lip. And then you can do under the arm, so like just below the armpit area, and they have I've heard it called the karate chop point, so the side of the hand. I don't know if that's actually the technical term for it, but you can tap that point as well. So anything that's like not on the face, you can use two or four fingers. On the face, you definitely just want to use two or one, because obviously you're going to get your fingers all in your face. It just makes more sense. And then the tapping is usually done quite slowly, but I would say that it really is up to you and what you're trying to process when it comes to the speed of the tapping. So if you say you're a bit agitated, then your tapping might be kind of faster, and that might feel quite natural and quite comfortable. You might be like, you know, pitter patter of like raindrops kind of all over the place. Or if you're really overwhelmed and stressed and tired, you might take, you know, one finger on either side of the eye and just go like really slow. Someone said Mary had a little lamb, you know, so so quite slow, you know, it's not super fast. That's basically it. There's those points and you tap on them. And then the idea is that you're supposed to think through something while you're doing it. So you might focus on something that you feel like is a blocker. Like maybe you could focus on something quite deep, like being worthy, or, you know, feeling something, or you could focus on something that's actually happened and you're trying to kind of release that emotion. The thing that comes to me is a lot of people say, if you've got really strong emotions, don't just kind of shove them away and distract yourself, you know, sit with them and be aware of them. But I've never really liked the term sit with, because I feel like that means like you're going to what, sit down and stare at a blank wall and stare at your feelings. And when does sitting with become like wallowing, you know, you're like, where's the crossover
stewing
point?
In, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or stewing, or getting, you know, making yourself angry or getting worse, or, you know, something like that. So I think sit with is a bit vague and maybe not very helpful, but I think EFT tapping is a way to sit with, if you want to use that phrase, your emotions. So you literally would find a place where you can rest or something, or sit down or be a bit more comfy. I mean, you could stand up, to be honest. A lot of tapping in like Tai Chi and Qigong is stood up. You do your legs and your and everything, the whole body. But basically, you want to take a moment to be aware of the feelings, and especially if they're quite strong ones, and then do this tapping while you kind of contemplate that process. And then if you really need to release, you might use like mental phrases to help release that as well. So you might say like, well, I was told I was a piece of crap, but I know that's not right, you know. And then while you're doing it, you're tapping the whole time, and you kind of like counter the negative thoughts with positive ones as you go through it, if that's the issue that you're trying to work through. I think that it's a lot better, or it can work, sorry, I should say, it can work a lot better than other forms of like meditation, because you're moving while you're doing it. And one, a lot of people who really hold a lot of agitation or, you know, strong emotions, sitting still can be really difficult. So it's like almost like a step that they can do. I have people who fidget during Shavasana and stuff, you know, and it's like, well, if you could just tap your fingertips constantly instead of fidgeting, then at least you're getting, you're, you know, it's a more mindful, chosen movement rather than not thinking about it, but wiggling lots, you know.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So, I mean, I have people say to me that meditation hasn't worked for them because of stuff like that.
I mean, I've had people say it to me, and I say, oh, well, have you had any, you know, have you had a cup of coffee before? And they're like, yeah. It's like, well, well, maybe that's why, but but yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people who do struggle with sitting still and want to bounce and move, and not just from an energy perspective, but because what they're feeling is uncomfortable. So it's like, I'm uncomfortable now. So when you're uncomfortable, you're like, oh, I should move. You know, if you're uncomfortable when you're sat on the couch, you would stand up and you would move, or you'd grab another cushion. So when you're feeling into uncomfortable emotions, maybe when you're meditating or when you're doing a relaxation or something in a yoga class, you want to move. So this kind of gives that option. But also, obviously, like I said, it is rooted in traditional Chinese medicine. So there is a theme here that you are trying to balance those energies in the body, you know, that something is out of balance. And by tapping and thinking about it, and you can bring it back into balance if you want to delve more into that side of things.
So yeah, on a very basic level, it wouldn't matter where you did it necessarily, but is there a deeper level where you tap a certain area for certain emotions and certain, because of the acupuncture sort of equivalents?
Yeah. So like if it's your, if you're just like someone who doesn't know much about, say, traditional Chinese medicine or the acupressure points or something like that, you might just use it as a way to release energy. You know, you might just give yourself a bit of a shake, you know, have a bit of a tap on your face and these points, and you could follow maybe something on YouTube or something like that. But if you really wanted to delve deep, then yeah, each point, each meridian line, and then each point on the meridian lines do represent areas of, you know, health and wellness. So that's mental health and physical health. So if there's something particularly bothering you, you might aim for a particular point to tap with EFT tapping, but obviously with acupressure you would just push on it. So, but like, it's a similar kind of thing. You know, you're putting awareness into that spot, which potentially that one spot is, you know, can help, or that meridian can help with, you know, emotional or mental wellness as well. I do add acupressure points to my yoga classes. When we do our neck and shoulders class, the block at the base of the skull.
Oh, yeah.
Those are some acupressure points there at the base of the skull. And then when we use the tennis balls on the tops of the shoulders lying down, like just under the muscle there, like where you could grab with your hands, those are two acupressure points. So it's your gallbladder one, 21 and 23, I think, or something like that. So those are also...
The gallbladder ones on your neck?
Yeah, so all meridian lines are named after organs, and then they go through that organ head to toe. So it's a full line from your head down to your toes, and then it goes through an organ, and then they're usually named after those organs. But it's worth mentioning that that does not mean that the actual organ itself would be ill or out of balance. So sometimes they might say, oh, you need to work on your kidney 5, your kidney meridian's out of balance. But that doesn't mean there's anything actually wrong with your kidneys. Worth bearing that in mind when you start looking into all this as well.
Okay. So in the sense of the basis for meridian lines and all that stuff, I assume this is something that's obviously ancient, but thousands of years old, I guess, built on. And it's a trial and error process, and they've made a book out of what works and what doesn't work and all that stuff. But in terms of what we would think of in terms of, you know, let's say Western science, it's just science. That's what Richard Dawkins says. It's not Western science, it's just science. Is there like scientific evidence for these things, or is it still a little bit, does it seem a little bit less proven in terms of the way we look at things empirically? Because it's still, I feel like that sort of thing's kind of still looked on as a bit of sort of like hocus pocus, mumbo jumbo. It's not quite homeopathy.
No.
But I know people that it's worked. My dad had a car accident, which is a bit of a running theme in my family, if people not been able to drive cars properly. But he had acupuncture on his back, and I think that did like more good than any of the other stuff.
Yeah, so I would say like the points themselves, when you talk about acupuncture, acupressure, and those meridian lines, there is a discrepancy between, we say, more modern science or, you know, more modern medicine and those. I think they do kind of feel like they're a bit nonsense. But that's in terms of, like you were saying, you know, healing your back with acupuncture or something like that, you know, something very physical. But when it comes to mental issues, there is research that shows that, you know, EFT tapping does help people process things. That could be because you're just moving or something while you're trying to process it. It could be because you're stimulating nerve endings while you're trying to process. So you're bringing your brain, even though you're contemplating something that's not real in a way, because it's not in the right here and now, it's only a memory. So you're bringing yourself into a state that isn't real, but at the same time, you're grounding into right now, into here and now. So maybe like that contrast helps the healing process in the mind.
No, what do you mean? Are you, because you're visualizing something else, or like you're telling yourself?
Yeah, so if you're healing from like a trauma, you might think about that trauma while you're doing your EFT tapping. And again, like that would probably be with someone. You wouldn't do that on your own necessarily. You might do that with someone with you. And then while you're going through that kind of healing process, there's like that twofold thing is happening. You're imagining something, and you're trying to ground into right now, trying to be aware of the present in your body. Because I think sometimes when we say, oh, I'm too in my head at the moment, you know, things like that, it's like trying to pull your awareness out of your head whilst you're still trying to go through something, you know, trying to process something. So there is definitely science behind the mental health side of it, especially with EFT tapping and stuff. Like, I think that's one of the reasons why it's quite popular.
You mean science in terms of results?
Bit of both.
Okay.
Bit of both. So like, I wouldn't say there's like been massive studies, because I haven't seen any like, you know, 2,000, 3,000 people massive studies kind of done on it. But there is results studies where they say the people have said that this is helping them. So in that way, it helps.
I mean, those sorts of things, I'm not poo-pooing this at all. I'm sure it is helpful.
Mm.
But in terms of like people doing stuff that puts them supposedly mentally in a better place, it's such a difficult thing to quantify. Yeah. Firstly, there will be some sort of placebo effect, and not that it's not helping at all, but just the fact that you've decided to do something about, I mean, I sometimes wonder whether meditation is that for me sometimes, just the fact that I do something. I mean, I feel like it does actually like with the whole like scratching the car thing and like definitely not focus on it or continually bringing that up. Like, I think that there are sort of like a sort of tangible result, but I just think the very fact that you've decided to do a thing about your problem and you kind of channeled, you know, well, I'm doing something and so there's going to be results a lot of the time. So there's that. And then any sort of self-reporting is notoriously not 100% reliable, because you can do like self-reported surveys on whether you've had certain, you know, surgeries or procedures or other things, and you can say, oh, it's really worked for me, because again, you feel like you have to just, if you've sacrificed a lot to go through something, it's a lot to say, oh, well, it's a disaster and I'm still as miserable as ever. So you're more likely to give a positive result to the fact that it's gone well. But if you measured them by other metrics, like the levels of, say, anxiety or depression or sleeplessness or other life aspects, then they may still be quite negative. But the actual self-reporting, oh, yes, it has worked for me, is a different thing. So I think that's really tricky.
That's definitely the case. Absolutely. I think that's why that when we talk about the meridian points in terms of physical ailments, they can immediately say, nah, there's nothing there. We don't believe it, because they're saying like, oh, well, pressing on the spot between your index finger and your thumb doesn't actually, you know, stop your stomach from producing more acid and therefore reduce your nausea. It's not gonna you know, or it's stuff like that. So I think there is like, that's why science, that side of it, doesn't really want to embrace it. But there's definitely the thing of like, I mean, there's literally a paper on it where people who believed they were going to do something for their back pain, like this will heal your back pain, like say physio or something, it worked more than people who were given the same exercises but were told, oh, just, you know, this is just a yoga class. Like, it was the mental mindset of what they were expecting to get out of it changed how well it worked.
Yoga for Aging does that all the time, because obviously, like, I do Yoga of Aging videos, but there's so many of them are like titled like all right. So many of them are titled like yoga for back pain's a big one, but like other things, like yoga for creativity or something. You just think, really?
Yeah.
Like, but I think if you go in with thinking, oh, well, this is
going to stop my writer's block,
these magic beans, or like, you know, you might go out and psychologically you'd be in a place where you think it is going to help, because you've put the hours in, and so of course.
Yeah, and of course a good teacher will tap into some of these ancient techniques as well. So if you're working more on creativity or something,
not Adrian then. But
I'm not saying she's not doing it. I'm just saying that if, you know, one of the benefits of trying to be a well-trained yoga teacher is that, you know, you don't just turn up to a class and literally move your body and that's that. There should be a point behind it. So if you're saying, like you're saying, oh, we'll work on creativity or something, you might not even tell the students that, but you might work on stretching and waking up the meridian line that is related to, you know, blockers in creativity or speech or something like that. And then if you strongly believe that what you're doing is going to help, and then on top of that, they are using some of these ancient techniques, and that could be meridians, that could be nadis, you know, more Indian style things. So it doesn't really matter what you use. But if you're using that, then that could be even what other people would say works. Like, oh, it really works because, you know, I say I do this class, then I've made a point to teach a class that's really focused on waking up this area of the body or a chakra or a meridian or something like that. And then these people come away saying they feel fantastic. So I know that my chakra class works or something. Mm. Even though it could just be you've told them it's going to make them feel priming, better, so it does.
Interesting. If you could come up with a yoga for the common cold, that would be good for me at the moment. So can you do ones that, for your immune system or something, like yoga for the immune system?
Yeah, I bet if you searched on YouTube or something, you'll definitely find yoga for a cold.
Find a load of charlatans on there, that's why. Ofcom don't regulate YouTube. I don't know if you know that.
do they not? Oh, God.
Just the four nerds that decide what's problematic or not, and YouTube headquarters.
I think what you'll find, if you're looking for classes for immunity, what you'll find are ones based around lymph node massage and release through the lymph nodes. So like lymph massage, self-lymph massage will probably be what you'll find in the class.
You do that actually, don't you?
So, yeah.
So this... I don't know, I've never been to China, obviously. Mm. I say not obviously, and those people have been to China. But is it incredibly common to be treated for things with Chinese medicines and stuff? Or have they changed a bit?
No. You can go to clinics. Yeah, they have like hospitals and everything that work based on the old traditional medicines. I will caveat all of my talk about Chinese medicine with the fact that I do not agree with a lot of it.
Yeah,
obviously.
Okay.
You
don't think ground up tiger penis makes you more virulent in bed, yeah.
It's the same as that. So that can just go, you know, to Mars. But yeah, the meridian lines, the spiritual side of it, the mental side of it, acupuncture, that seems relatively all right. Herbal remedies for things, obviously they have different plants in China than we have had in the West and in the US. So they might actually have a plant that works better than something we have to fix something. I don't know, like maybe to balance hormones or to help with, you know, stomach problems or, you know, something that,
if they don't have it,
like
then they've probably bought out the African country that does it so that they can screw us in 30 years time.
Well, I just mean, like, so I'm not saying herbal remedies are obviously good. You know, I agree with a lot of those. And, you know, meridian lines and pressure and, you know, working with your own internal mindset and energy can be very good for you, especially if you believe that it's going to help. We already talked about that. Yeah. But I would say there are obviously going to be extreme areas of every kind of, you know, ancient thing. And one of them is obviously in Chinese medicine, this idea that certain eating body parts or animals of certain things can be good for you, which is not recommended in the modern world.
There's probably a placebo effect there as well, though, isn't there?
And I also think it's a bit of an odd one, because like in the other cultures, like say, you know, if you go back towards Buddhism and stuff, there's a, you know, very, like you don't eat meat, you don't eat anything from animals, you don't, you know, they're pretty much vegan. Obviously there will be some Buddhists who eat meat, and, you know, there's a lot of spiritual side of it in general as a religion, but I mean, it's quite common to see that, oh well, you don't hurt animals. So I find it very strange that Chinese medicine never made that step. They are still in the let's grind up some rhino horn, and like, it's a bit weird.
Yeah, do you know, I mean, that'll be, sorry, I got a bloody cough now. Need some rhino throat to sort that out. Is that not, I remember reading a book, well, I can't remember which one it was, but one of the ones I always cite, probably, about how Eastern and Western minds are created differently, and some of that might be down to, partly down to the forms of agriculture and stuff like that. So basically the geography affects how the people's culture has developed more so than you might think, because like maybe so this theory partly was about the fact that Confucianism took off much more in the East, not because the idea just happened to be there, but it took hold because of the specific societies they lived in, with like large crop gathering or something like that. It made it more about a collective, which is maybe it's why communism sort of, like, I don't know, not that they really live under communism proper communism's never been tried, of course, but isn't there a famous study where like if you look at a painting and you're from an Eastern culture, you're more likely to focus on the differences in the landscape. If you're from a Western culture, you look at if there's like a person or one focal thing, you focus on that. I'm sure there's a very famous study about differently. So basically what I'm sort of saying is the Chinese, these philosophies and stuff and whatever, it'll partly be possibly down to the animals that happen to live in that part of the world that they've either domesticated or farmed or whatever, and whereas places where Buddhism would have taken hold may have been, there may be less animals that they eat for some reason, because it's not just Buddhism that has a focus on not eating meat, but Hinduism doesn't so much, but that's India, that's also the same part of the world, so it makes sense that they would have similar cultural ideas even though the religions are different.
And obviously there will be kind of, I would say, religions or beliefs that are in China or that came from China that will be vegetarian and vegan. I'm not saying they don't exist. It's just that's never, to traditional Chinese medicine, it never linked. But that's really interesting about geography. I never really thought about that, because China does have a really unique geography. When you see some of the pictures and it's like, is that even real? Is that on a different planet?
I guess it's a massive country as well, though, isn't it? So.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And then you're talking about a country that's been sort of like, homogenized is the wrong term, because it's different. Like, obviously, you've got Han Chinese and Cantonese are different. One scene is very much more superior in the current regime. Like, I think you have to basically be Han Chinese to be of any authoritative role at all now. And obviously, they've got the Tibetans and the Uyghurs are being massively oppressed and stuff.
Yes.
But in general, I think China as a country has existed as like a large, not sort of homogenous culture, sort of like an ancient kingdom for like such a long time as well. It's basically kind of been set geography as well for a long time, a little bit of encroachment from other countries or whatever, but it's been like a defined kingdom for quite a long time, hasn't
it?
You should read Guns, Germs and Steel. It's just like, I don't know if that's the book I got it from or that, but just, I mean, maybe it's a thesis and maybe it's like you can tear some parts of it apart, but just the idea that the geography of the continent affects the way that the people like develop culturally, I hadn't really thought of before. And a lot of the points.
No, but it's not surprising
sense.
When you say it, is it? It's not like you go, oh, I never thought that would work. It's like, no, that makes perfect sense.
But
yeah,
there's also stuff like it explains why certain technological advances happen in certain areas of the world because of the way that the crops moved along the equator and stuff is like talking about wheat could move across the Eurasian plain more so because you could move in a lateral direction or longitudinal,
right.
Whatever left and right is, east and west.
Yeah.
Right. You could, the crops could more easily travel from one side to the other. Dude. Whereas if you look at the Andes and you couldn't, because that's quite a thin bit of land, you know, where the Panamanian thing is. And that Central America, basically.
Yes.
It's called a name. Yeah. It's called a name. It's called the Panamanian something or other.
Is that what we call like where the Panama Canal is? And that area, that little tiny strip of land.
Which is a very important strip of land because it stops like there being so much extreme weather completely crossing two oceans to hit Africa, doesn't it? So it was, I'm sure that has got something to do with human evolution because it made the savannah more habitable perhaps when that happened.
Right.
I'm sure I've seen that somewhere. So anyway, that area of Central America to spread maize took so much longer because new maize plants would have to acclimatise to different climates along the north-south up and down line, whatever one's long. I don't know which one's longitude and latitude, nor but
latitude go north to south, and longitude go east to west.
So it took longer to spread, and so that impeded the advancement of certain technologies, and then you add 500 years to that process and Western Europe's able to travel to that part of the country and take it over relatively easily because they've developed technologically in other areas. It's nothing to do with the people themselves and the fact that some are indigenous to and that have different coloured skins or whatever. It's to do with the geography of the... Well, that's his thesis anyway, but it made a lot of sense. And I think it's a great book to at least read for the ideas. I'll let you borrow it after you finish reading the other book I lent you that I never hear anything
about. I have got about halfway through that book and then it just kind of like went to the back of the pile.
Oh, that's all right.
I will finish it though. I got to the point where it started making sense and then I stopped.
The perfect time to stop, yeah. Okay.
I know.
I've lent people books that I'm never getting back. I know that.
I only did that a couple of times when I was a teenager and then I thought I'm never doing this again because they're my books and I want them back.
I leave a space on the bookshelf though, so I'm looking at these empty gaps where
your friends showed their true colors.
So, exactly. So I just know there's always that little bit of because I like order and there's holes in it.
Right, that's it. I've got to let it go. I'll do some tapping for that book.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll let it go. But I do think that emotional freedom technique is used for that, but I have found that it's helpful for we call them limiting beliefs. So if you identify something that you truly, honestly think, I think this is ingrained into me, like, I don't know, say if you, the money is the root of all evil, and so you struggle to get money, and you struggle to use it and spend it, and you struggle to save it because you find it icky or uncomfortable. Even something like that, emotional freedom technique could help with that.
Well, so you stop thinking that.
Yeah, so you start realizing that everybody needs money and we all have to have money and money is not the root of all evil and you can do a lot of good with a lot of money, so.
Yeah, that's a phrase that took off so well, didn't it? Like.
Yeah, well, should we blame someone for that? I want to blame someone for that.
I mean, that's it, you know, like a load of good quotes, like not quotes, slogans, like slogans just take root, don't they? And it's just, there's just shortcuts to really thinking deeply about something. Obviously, money is the root of a lot of evil is done because of money. But
is it money or is it just greed?
Yeah, I suppose,
you know, because like greed kind of separates it from the money itself.
It wasn't like human beings used to be perfect before money got invented, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
They were still hoarding resources and stuff probably beforehand and fighting over it.
And there's also like, maybe still on the money theme, you could kind of pull, say like if you as a child went through a lot of stuff where your parents didn't have very much, you might have always had this feeling that there's never enough. There's never enough to go around, or there's never enough money. No matter how much money you bring into the house, there's never enough, you know, things like that. So then you might work through something like that as well. Like, oh no, I do have enough. You know, I can buy food. I can pay my bills. I can, you know, and kind of work through that kind of stuff as well, maybe.
So you heard it here first. EFT can cure communism.
Sorry, my phone's going off. Hold on. I have a 2 o'clock alarm that reminds me to take my vitamins and my shatavari.
I don't know what that is. What's that?
Shatavari. It's an Indian herb for balancing. It's really good for women, for helping them balance their hormones and stuff, and
Okay.
keep PMS symptoms low. And it's called an adaptogen, kind of like ashwagandha is really popular. I don't know if you've heard that one. All the uni kids love it because it's supposed to help with stress. So ashwagandha is an adaptogen, and shatavari is an adaptogen. Yeah, I've been taking it for quite a long time now. I think you have to take adaptogens for like 3 months before you really feel a difference, especially if it's like a woman's cycle that you want to affect, you know. I think it really makes a big difference. I feel like I'm less moody when I take it, if that makes sense. So
okay.
It's a really funny plant as well. If you ever look it up, it's got like a million roots that look like little fingers in a ball. It's got a funny name as well, like the woman with the 100 husbands or something like that.
Okay.
That's the like translation. I think it's because it's supposed to give her so much energy that she can have 100 husbands. I don't know what the theory is behind it, but it's a funny name. It made me laugh.
Doesn't fit with my idea of evolutionary psychology, that, but...
No, it doesn't.
She seems like an anomaly. Well, God bless whoever tried that out for 3 months before getting an effect. I mean, that's like perseverance,
I know, right?
Isn't it? Like...
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you ever have any comments or feedback, or you want to kind of tell us something or give us an idea of what you want us to talk about, we are all ears as always. But thank you so much for listening. Make sure you follow us on all the social media accounts. Check out our websites for regular updates and what's going on.
You say all the social media accounts.
All the social media, Facebook, Instagram.
Oh, you use Facebook as well, don't you?
I have hidden accounts also on LinkedIn and YouTube.
You have hidden accounts?
I don't use them, so I don't advertise them out. But they're there, so you could find me. Don't know what you're going to find on them, but...
Yeah, follow me as well.